Okay, welcome back, everybody. And we have a special guest on the telephone this morning, shifting gears here, and actually headed up north, up by Glacier Parkway, but through Missoula. So, Tom, we have a special guest on the phone. She is Jennifer, is it Ferenstein?
Yes.
Yep.
It's Jennifer Ferenstein, and you're with the Wilderness Society, right?
Yeah, I sure am.
Okay, so now you guys are headquartered here in Missoula, or just you are here in Missoula?
Yeah, actually, I'm just here in Missoula. I went to the University of Montana and was able to keep a job here, so I was lucky enough to do that. The main office for the region is down in Bozeman.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, we won't hold that against you. I assume you're a Grizz, then, and not a Bobcat.
Of course.
Okay, okay. Just,
well, now that we can keep you on the line.
Just checking. Okay. So Jennifer, tell me a little bit about the Wilderness Society. What do you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So we've been around for a while, since about 1935, and really a recognition of how important open space, public lands, clean water are to the American public. And so, you know, we started working back then on protecting large areas of public lands for wildlife and humans. Basically, the idea to some extent was in Bob Marshall, who the Bob Marshall Wilderness is named after, was one of our founders. And I think he really epitomized what the Wilderness Society stands for, which is that ability to have solitude, to hunt, to fish, to take your family out, and get away from it all, get away from roads, get away from some of the technologies. And even then, we're starting to kind of bear down on people. And so the idea was to protect some large swaths of land and allow for that solitude and that sort of feeling of being away from it all.
So in the press release that I was sent, and the reason I wanted to get you on to talk about it, because I think it will be something that people have opinions on both sides, was the idea that there are sections of Montana, particularly a part of a national forest here, Lewis and Clark National Forest, called the Badger 2 Medicine Area, that you're working to make off-limits to drilling. Is that right?
Yeah, that's kind of the basic gist of it. That area is part of the Rocky Mountain Front, which is also part of a larger area called the Crown of the Continent, which is really the wildest part of Montana. It's really mountainous, and frankly, along that east slope of the Rocky Mountains, it's an area that's been traditionally used by the Blackfeet tribe, by hunters and anglers, outfitters and guides, and large private landowners have ranches along there. So it's an area that's traditionally been more, I'd say, agriculture and oriented towards outdoor activities. And frankly, it's not an area that ever yielded oil and gas. You know, a lot of the oil and gas stuff is further to the east, you know, obviously going out towards the Bakken and the Plains. So this is an area that has been important for a lot of uses in Montana.
Now, it is also an area, though, that some companies, at least one, I think it's Solenex, have leased acres of this property since the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing when you think about it. So in the 80s, a lot of public lands were put out there for leasing. And again, it was sort of going back to an era when it was kind of a sense of let's just put it out there and see what happens. And the Blackfeet tribe and others opposed that oil and gas leasing at that time. You know, that's going back about 30 years now. And yet that area was leased, and a lot of folks, including the Wilderness Society, the Blackfeet, and others, contend that it never should have been leased in the first place, and that the way the Bureau of Land Management went about it was illegal, but they made a number of mistakes in the process of leasing. So the basic tenet about whether that area...
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to ask you, has it been found to be illegal by the courts, or is that just something they've charged since the 80s?
Yeah, that's a good question. So some of the leases that were leased in that very area south of the Badger 2 Medicine were actually found to have been at the same time under the same circumstances, were challenged in court a number of years ago and were found to be illegal and were canceled. For whatever reason, those leases at the time that they were leased in the Badger were not challenged. And then in the 90s, a judge looked at the challenge and suspended it because the BLM and the Forest Service decided to put the leases on hold for a while. So that underlying premise, that question, is still unanswered, and it may have to be answered before we get a final resolution on this issue.
Now, one of the arguments that have been used against this pursuit is basically this area isn't as pristine as or as wild as some of its proponents have been making. There's railroad lines through it. There's pipelines through it. People ride ATVs through it. Why a special dispensation of you can't build here for the oil company when all this other stuff apparently is there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've heard those claims made before. You know, probably the most compelling argument, and it really can only be made legitimately, I think, by the Blackfeet and other tribes that have used the area. I mean, basically, there's 12,000 years of history and culture there. And that area is adjacent. There's one highway, Highway 2, that separates it from Glacier National Park. It's off limits to ATVs and other motorized use. And there are no...
Highway 2goes through it too, right?
Highway 2 is sort of divides the Badger 2 Medicine area of Lewis and Clark from Glacier National Park. So, but it's not that the proposed well site, which is a 6,000 acre area, is, you know, right, the well site's not right adjacent to Highway 2. So in order for Solonex to actually develop that site, they'd have to build about 5 miles of road, a temporary bridge over the Badger, the Two Medicine, and also Two Medicine River, and also built a well pad and a number of things. So the area is undeveloped, and
hang on, I thought for just a moment. We're up against the break. We're going to do this about every 10 minutes or so, just to let you know. Let's see, we have a caller on the line. Mike wants to visit with you. 721-1290 is our number. You can also make your comments on our Facebook page. And we'll be opening up the lines during the break. It will be your best opportunity to call in if you want to get in on the conversation. 721-1290 is the number. Thanks, Jennifer. You're doing great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. No, I will be honest with you. I'm probably the more conservative of the two of us in that I have always put, if you will, people ahead of critters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When it comes to jobs, like during the logging thing back in the 70s, I just felt really bad that somebody, you know, loggers, people that took their living from the land and made a pretty good living, all of a sudden were shut off, and there was a lot of suicides, broken families because of some owls or whatever, you know. If I was ever in a position to make decisions, I would always put the people first and try to make a life for the land, you know what I mean? But heck, people got to make a living. They got to support their family somehow. We can't all work and work it. So, anyway,
doesn't even exist, does it?
I'm just saying.
Perkins
still over there.
I'd say it's always a balancing act, but, you know, the Blackfeet are their sovereign nation with 12,000 years of culture and history in there, and they are adamantly opposed to it. So, you know, there's people's livings, there's people's, you know, religious beliefs, there's all sorts of things at stake. It's not a cut and dried issue by any stretch of the imagination. It's a hard one, and it's complicated.
Okay, all right. Well, I guarantee you might get some comments. I hope you have thick skin.
Oh, I do. Believe me, I do.
Okay, good. All right. But being from Montana, you have to, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if your headquarters are in Bozeman, you have to. Yes, now, by here we go. And we're back on TalkBack,
721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. And John King is over there. I'm Peter Christian. Joining us on the phone is Jennifer Ferenstein, and she's with the Wilderness Society. And we promised we'd get some calls on. So, Mike, you are on with Jennifer. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Well, hello, Jennifer. I got one real dumb question to ask you. What kind of fuel are you burning in that rig you're driving?
Oh, right now? Gasoline.
Yeah.
This is natural gas up there that they're looking at in the bad track.
Can you tell me where gasoline comes from? That would be the next question.
Yeah, well, it comes from all over the country. And, you know, the one thing that's important about the Badger is it's natural gas that they're looking at.
There's a number of tribes up there that have...
She's saying that natural gas is what they're trying to get out of the Badger.
Yeah, well, that could be, but does she know what... natural gas is a much cleaner fuel in a vehicle than gasoline, so again, natural gas would be the obvious thing you'd go for. But can you tell me what the results was on that test drill that Willie drilled up in Cutbank Creek north of Browning back in the 70s? Because there's a hole there, and I'd like to know what they found.
Yeah, there's been some drilling up along there, Fletcher Pass, and there's been a number of dry holes, and a lot of those have been capped primarily because it hasn't been economically feasible, especially if you look at right now with the low price for a barrel of oil.
Well, I know what you're talking about, but you don't know what's in there until you drill a hole in the ground. You need to do some exploration, but there has been a number of exploratory wells
in the area, and they have all been capped. The other thing I'd like to say, Mike, is that on the reservation, the tribes have run out of their...
Mike, Jennifer, give her a break. Mike, just for a second, please. All right, let's go back. Everybody could actually understand what the two of you were saying. And Jennifer said that there were exploratory wells, and Mike countered and said, no, there's not. There's not roads out there to build these exploratory wells. So, Jennifer, could you respond to that?
There's a bunch of wells in the Teddy Roosevelt area, which is on the Boone and Crockett Ranch. They tried a well up there that has been tapped. And like I said, there was one at Fletcher Pass, which is down a little bit further to the south, Rogers Pass area. And there's a lot of state lands up there and in the general area that has been leased and has not proven. But the one I think is important is the tribe also has leased a number of the acres on the Blackfeet Reservation to Anschutz and some other large companies. Some of that has not yielded much either at this point. But the tribe has also said to Sidney Longwell at Solonex, you know, if you want a spot to drill, we've got some options for you on our land, and we would be happy to explore those with you as well.
Oh, okay. It's all right to drill on the Blackfoot Reservation, but the Blackfeet are going to throw a connection if you drill on federal land. Is that the way I read this, or am I not hearing you correctly?
The Blackfeet don't want to see any drilling in the Badger because of its cultural significance for them, but they are not opposed to drilling.
Okay. Mike, I'm going to let you go. Thanks. I was hoping maybe you could just explain briefly. This is something that I think a lot of people don't understand, right? So the Blackfeet Reservation is adjacent to the Badger Two Medicine area, but it isn't encompassing it. And so what cultural heritage is special about this place? You say that there have been human civilization there for 12,000 years. Well, you could throw a dart at the world and not drill there because that's pretty much the case for a lot of the planet. So let me ask you, why is this special in its cultural aspect?
Yeah, so that is a good question. You know, the Blackfeet call the whole Rocky Mountain the spine of the backbone of the world. But in particular, that Badger area is a spot where they have traditionally had sweats and important rituals and sort of their creation myth. I mean, if you look at the Indian names for the mountain peaks along there, they all tell a story, and they all are basically part of the creation stories of that tribe.
So, Jennifer, hang on. Is that area, I guess the question was asked, is that area that you're talking about part of the reservation itself?
No, it's adjacent to it, but it's also part of what has been designated as a traditional cultural district, which gives it special significance and acknowledges how important it is to the tribe.
Designated by the tribe or by the state of Montana or by the federal government or what?
Yeah, so it's designated by, in conjunction with the State Historic Preservation Office, so the state and the tribe. It's part of a part of the Department of Interior related to the Park Service. So the badger is called the... Go ahead.
The National Park Service?
Yep.
Or Montana Fish Wildlife Park. Yeah.
No, National Park Service. So Glacier, yeah. So to that level of government.
We're up against another break. We appreciate your patience with that. Catherine is waiting to visit with you. We also have one line open. It's 721-1290. Talking about the Badger 2 Medicine and the company that wants to drill there, at least do some exploratory wells, and the Blackfoot Tribe and many other organizations like the Wilderness Society trying to keep that from happening.
And they've had a lease on this property since the 80s. And
right.
They're upset, and apparently a Montana judge is also upset at how nothing has been able to happen there for
right.
so long. It's been kind of... Dimey,
we're going to come right back. That's kind of a passive-aggressive deal. We just won't do anything, and hopefully they'll give up and go away. We'll be right back.
Sounds like my kids in their rooms.
Yeah, I think it's been too long, too. I think it's a federal judge. It's the judge out of Washington, D.C., that that case is in front of right now. And I agree, and I think we all agree that it would be good to get this resolved. Been going on too long.
Well, I want to know who's been paying all the legal bills. I mean, is the company
sure.
been footing all their own legal bills, or?
Well, you know, they have a Mountain States Legal Foundation is representing them, and they're a nonprofit legal firm. I don't know how they work, honestly. But I doubt that Sidney Longwell has been paying. I mean, he sunk. The lease was about $6,000 when he got it.
I've read that the head of the Mountain State legal firm, the head of it is also the head of one of the companies that has a lease on the property.
Yeah, Devin.
So it might be
basically
501c3 by the same people.
Mountain State is a 501c3, I think. And Devin has a lease in the Badger as well. Devin Energy. It's complicated. I mean, it takes up a room with all the information that's come out of it.
The area's not that big, right? I mean, it's not that huge of an area, right?
No, it's 130,000 acres is the Badger, but only about 40,000 of it is under lease.
Sure. Well, I thought that they had like 6,200 acres under lease.
Well,
is
so Solonex does. Yeah, Solonex has 6,200, but Devin and two other companies, a family trust, and I think there's two or three other companies. So total in the Badger now there's 40,000 acres or so, 41,000 acres of leases in the 130,000 acre. But only Sydney's lease, the Longwell leases, is the most ready to lease, ready to explore.
Well, let me ask you this, Jennifer. Is there any sort of a buyback option by the federal government saying, hey, you know, we'll pay what you guys pay to get these leases if you'll just give them up? I mean, would that make a difference, you know?
I think so. I mean, I think there's a lot of room to negotiate, and it's not, I mean, in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been multiple times that private individuals have reached out. I mean, in a way, I don't think necessarily that the taxpayers should be on the hook to paying companies,
right.
But I think that if there's a will, there's a way, and if we
okay.
we think there's value here, we should figure out how to do it.
10 seconds. Hang on. Here we go. Welcome back to TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, we do have Jennifer Fahrenstein on the phone with us this morning. She's right here in Missoula, actually, just down the street. It's the Wilderness Society, and let's see, Catherine is up next. Hi, Catherine, you're on with Jennifer. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Question here. There are 53, I think it's 53, tribes involved in a land buyback program, and it's got millions upon millions of dollars in it for land acquisition. The Blackfoot tribe is one of them. So is the tribe trying to buy back the land from the Fed state or other landowners in the Two Badger region? Have they considered
No. I mean, it's federal lands, and it's going to, you know, I will say there are folks in the Blackfeet tribe that feel like that Badger 2 Medicine area should never have gone out of their traditional land. But it's not, that's not on the table, and I think that land will stay a part of the Lewis and Clark National Forest, and there's no plans to transfer it.
Why not? It does seem like a logical step if you want to protect it for the Blackfeet Nation, to put it under the Blackfeet Nation's control.
And they would have ownership of it. They could do what they want with it, and they could also pay back, to the feds, to other landowners for it,
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. Right now it's managed by the Forest Service. There are tribal and non-tribal members that have grazing leases in there, so ranchers use it for, just as an example. There's a badger cabin back there that people use. People hunt and fish there, tribal and non-tribal. I think it's a valid question. I think that until the lease issue is resolved one way or another, you can't get to that underlying question. But I think if people want to have that conversation about who that land should ultimately belong to, I think that's a good question to have, or good conversation to have.
Sure. Okay, no, that was it. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you.
We have two lines open, 721-1290.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
the company that's paid for these leases at, what, like $1 an acre? I don't know about, there's a bunch, as we were talking about during the break, some 40,000 acres that have been leased. But at least Olenek, basically they're upset. They've spent, I think, $1 an acre on 6,200 acres for however many years since the 80s to hold these leases, and they can't use them. So what is if you're going to say you could, in the past the government said you can lease this, and now they're saying, well, you can't explore now. If that's the end result, how do you find justice in that, or what do you think would be a fair trade for that kind of switch from the federal government's perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that regardless of whether the leases, if it's found that they were illegal in the first place, I think that, Sidney did invest a certain amount of money in those leases, and clearly he should be compensated for the money he did. I do think that over the years, people have approached him and other lessees, initially, almost the whole Badger, almost all 130,000 acres was leased. And over the years, other companies, including some big players like British Petroleum, William, Oxy, they have gotten out of there. I think they saw sort of the writing on the wall, that this wasn't an area that, was hard to get into, be a hard area to develop, and there'd be a lot of opposition to it. So a lot of companies already have chosen to get out, and they've relinquished their leases or traded them off or made some pretty, I think, sound business decisions. And I do think that the judge, the courts, whomever, should fairly compensate Sidney, for what he's invested.
So how do we know
again,
you're not a representative? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I mean, how do we know that you're not a representative of Sidney that's just trying to get out of a bad lease where there's no oil and wants the people to pay for their bad business decisions?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that, what you said.
I think that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, if we start giving money back to people that have made bad leases where there's no oil,
I
mean, does that set a dangerous precedent where everyone backs out of the lease?
We don't know if there's no oil, because they admit it. Now, let me ask you this, Jennifer. The new technology of fracking has really kind of revolutionized the oil industry. Is there a way to maintain the integrity of that area through these companies by using fracking technology to find the oil underneath those areas without actually damaging the areas themselves that are so valuable to the folks in the Blackfeet tribe?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's the technological questions. And from my understanding and what I've heard the attorney for Sidney say is they're not interested or they're actually not looking to frack in there. But what I think, again, what the tribe has said, what my understanding of what they said is that the importance of the area is such that any disturbance is too much disturbance for them. It would be like saying...
Don't we already have disturbance?
Sorry?
Sorry, I was going to say, but don't we already have disturbance? I mean, as
yeah,
I mentioned
and they would
before,
say that, you know, there... Yeah, they would say, I think, that there's been some damage to the area already, but that doesn't justify more damage. You know, that's like saying, oh, there's something...
What it sounds like to me, Jennifer, is we don't mind the ATVs, and we don't mind the highways, and we don't mind the, you know, the power lines, but we just don't like oil, okay? We just don't like big oil. We're mad at big oil, and they ruin everything, and now, would it be even worse if it was like a coal mine?
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, and I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding in the sense that the tribe has oil and gas development on their property, on their land, and like I said, there's development that has been tried on state lands and other sections of land and private land around there. So it's really about what is, you know, are there areas that should be off limits to drilling or industrialization, I guess you could say, because I think you're right. It's really about, I mean, again, I'm not Blackfeet, so I can't always make the arguments or speak for them. But you know, if it was your church and somebody was proposing just a little bit of drilling in there, you know, how would that make you feel? So I think that has a lot to do with it for them.
As long as we get to share on the profits, go for it. Sorry, you know what I mean? I guess I don't have the whole cultural.
Peter's church doesn't have holy sites in Montana.
No, going down, so I'm sorry. It's not a pretty sight. Anyway, but I'm just really glad that I didn't horribly offend our guest Jennifer Ferenstein. Jennifer, we just lost you, right?
I know. I don't know what happened. It must have been. I don't know, a technological moment of fate, I guess.
Well,
but I'm back.
The receiver in
so, yeah. I couldn't stay away, though.
Before we lost you there, I had a question I wanted to ask, and it was about where we are in the legal proceedings, because you have mentioned multiple times throughout this interview that there was a question about whether or not the original lease was legal, and that there were other leases that happened around the same time and near the same area that were considered illegal later. And I guess my question is that what's under debate right now in the courts, or is it something else?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's a little complicated, but if you bear with me, I think I can explain it pretty quick. So, yeah, the question in front of the court in Judge Leon's court in Washington, D.C., that Solonex brought was, you know, and I think everybody actually agrees that it's been a long, tortuous process with lots of suspensions and really too long. And the judge even called it, I think, Kafka-esque, how long it's taken to get this issue through the feds. And so, again, I think, yeah, exactly. And it's not over yet. So I think everybody agrees there needs to be kind of a clear path forward. So that's what ultimately the judge said is, you know, federal government, you lay out a schedule for how you're going to handle this, and not when you're going to let Sydney drill or explore, but how you're going to decide what's going to happen and explain it. So the feds just did that, actually. They responded to the judge. And so I think what is likely to happen is that by Halloween, by October 31st, the Forest Service will make their recommendation to the BLM saying what they think should happen. Should the lease be canceled, or should they try to figure out how to lift the suspension? So the Forest Service will make a recommendation. The ultimate decision maker is the BLM, is the department in the Department of Interior, because they control the subsurface rights. So the BLM will make a decision by November 30th. So we're marching along. I mean, it's been a long time, but this is faster than, you know, it has been going. And then, so that'll be a point where Solonex and others can again step back in and see whether they think this is going in the right direction. So by the end of November, yeah.
I was just saying, we have a caller. Larry's ready to go, so let's get Larry on the line. Larry, you're on with Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey.
I had a question for you.
when I was working on this issue back in the mid-2000s, they were one of the possibilities, and maybe you guys have discussed this already, was possibility of trading that lease for one in an area with known reserves. And I didn't know whether that had been discovered or discussed or not.
Yeah, a lot. And that might be a really good option. You know, there are proven areas that are public lands in Montana, so you wouldn't lose any jobs, but they'd be in areas which are a lot less sensitive. So that would definitely be an option, and hopefully when the Forest Service and the BLM come forward, they can look at that. But it's been proposed to some of these lessees in the past, and I would love to see that explored more.
And also, they considered possibly trading, I don't know whether Sydney's still associated with that or not, but if they considered trading that to the tribe for, again, an area with known reserves, so the tribe would have control of that lease.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the attorney for Sydney actually said, what happens if we give you our leases? He said that to the tribe. And then you develop them, and we'll share the, you know, if there are any profits, which I think is a really open question. And the tribe rejected that because they don't want to see drilling, period, in the Badger. But, again, they did say, we'd be happy to have you look at some places on the reservation to trade out for your lease in the Badger. And that discussion, I think as long as it's in front of Judge Leon and it's still an open question, I don't think that Sydney's quite ready to go there yet. But who knows what will happen down the line? That's a great question.
Okay.
Larry, thanks for the call. And with that, we're up against a break. Catherine is back. We have another line open at 721-1290. So we're talking with Jennifer Ferenstein, the Wilderness Society, and talking about what's going on up in the Badger 2 Medicine up by the border of Glacier National Park. And there's a company that has some drilling rights there. And
it's an interesting spot. It's between the Bob Marshall Wilderness, Glacier National Park, and the Blackfeet Reservation. Then there's this little sliver of land, which is National Forest land.
So we're going to come back and continue talking about it right after this. And I'll be honest with you, Jennifer, I've never even been up there. So I've been to Glacier Park a couple times, but I don't remember anything about
that. Peter actually hasn't walked outside for 20 years.
I'm a worker bee, and I don't hunt or camp or hike or fish or backpack or bike ride or horseback ride. I may as well be living in Atlanta, you know what I mean? Surrounded by all this beauty, and it just kind of goes, huh?
Yeah, I know. Are you in a little bubble? Are you enclosed in a bubble, or what are you doing over there?
Let's put it this way. I get to work about 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you do.
I have full-time jobs, I usually get done by about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So busy day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we're going up there in 2 weeks to go up to the Badger. So it's a great time to be up there. Because, you know, the trees are changing and the smoke's gone. Hopefully it stays that way. So nice.
Are you allowed, just as a regular person, to go up there?
Sure.
Oh yeah,
it's
federal. Okay. Yeah, it's public land. It's you can't, like I said, it's closed to ATVs and stuff, but it's open to all other uses: hunting, hiking, log, you know, post and pole, whatever people want to do. Those are acceptable uses in that area.
So it'd be like going to Blue Mountain, Peter.
Blue Mountain.
Sure, it's Lola National Forest,
go
play in it.
So people tease me all the time. Not only would he know, would not know where to go, he wouldn't know what to do when he got there.
We want you to walk 40 miles that way and then ask for help.
So anyway, I'm the big Montana joke. I have all these clients all over the country. Oh, the place is, it's beautiful. Yeah, the fishing's great, I hear.
Here we go. Bye. 10 seconds.
back on TalkBack. It's Thursday, and it's absolutely gorgeous outside. Talking with Jennifer Fahrenstein, the Wilderness Society. She's here with us on the telephone. And we're talking about the Badger 2 Medicine Wilderness, and we have Catherine, who's back with another question. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. This is kind of an addendum to my previous question. How much, if any, is privately owned land in this area? And then are there any leases on that privately owned land? And if so, are there protests about those leases?
Yeah, so the Badger 2 Medicine area is all public lands. I don't think there's any holdings in that 130,000 acres that's managed by the Lewis and Clark National Forest. And there's no restrictions on private land exploration or development. So if somebody had a lease on private land, there wouldn't be any restrictions on that at all. And was that, did that answer your question, or was there something else? I mean, there's more than just Sydney's lease at the Badger.
There is?
Yeah, there's.
Yeah, there's.
Sydney has like 6,200 acres, but there's another, what, 30,000 or 34,000 acres leased?
Yeah, it's about 41,000 acres total.
So are there protests about those other leases too, then?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Sydney's lease is sort of the furthest along. Like, his got the longest in the process before it got suspended. So the other leases aren't as close to being developable, and those folks didn't either join Sydney in the lawsuit or... So it's hard, a little hard to say how they feel about it. You know, I was saying before that the Badger was almost completely leased at one point. I mean, almost all 130,000 acres. And a number of those lessees have already chosen different sort of routes to get out of their leases. And so those 40,000 that remain now are sort of an open question. And I think Sydney, because he's waited the longest, is the one that's kind of testing the waters, so to speak.
Now, maybe this will help clarify things just so people understand what stopped things. And Jennifer, I'm sure you'll be able to correct me because I'm just going off of memory here, but I think it was in the early 90s, Clinton interior appointee, Mr. Babbitt, basically put a hold on any development on these leases. And that's the place they are still at now, more than 12 years later.
Yeah, the word I heard was that they were languishing.
Yeah.
One other thing, then, is how much of that area, that 100-some-odd thousand acres that you're talking about, does the Blackfoot claim as sacred land?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, too. So that the traditional cultural districts designation actually takes up that 130,000 acres plus a little additional area over that swaps over onto the Flathead National Forest and actually goes over onto their reservation. So that, I guess the most clear answer is they see all of that acreage as culturally significant to them. So I guess that would be the answer there. They have a special interest. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, so then they, if this claim gets settled, they're going to go ahead and make claims against the other leases then, right? Is that the case?
Well, I mean, it's not for them, it's not for them to make a claim. It would be for the lessees to decide what the next step might be for them. But if Sydney were to prevail, and it was opened up for exploration, you know, you could argue that the other lessees might follow suit and demand that their leases be opened up. So then you're talking about maybe development, potentially development on 40,000 acres. If he doesn't either prevail in court or the federal government rules in a different direction, I don't know what the lessees will do. I think, again, the offers to trade out their leases for less sensitive areas or to get compensated for the amount they've invested to date would all be options for them. But they haven't ever challenged the suspension, so I can't really say what they'll do. I don't know what they'll do. But it's really...
Do you have any idea what the Blackfoot tribe is going to do? I mean, do they have any play for...
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, it was Solonex that precipitated this, you know, by saying enough is enough. We have waited too long. It wasn't the tribe that precipitated it. So, but once that happened, you know, it starts the ball rolling, and they reacted clearly that they don't want to see drilling in there or any other industrial activities. So I don't know what would happen next. I guess I would hope that, again, we could all figure out how to balance the different uses and figure out where there is a place for these companies to actually make good on their investments in the industry and step away from the badger.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I understand the sensitivity of the region. You know, I'm not Blackfeet either, but, I mean, I can understand there being a sacred ground or what do they call it, like the origination of the world in this particular area. You know, lots of cultures have these little things. But I guess my question for you is that it just seems that if the National Forest Service treats this oil company or this exploration lease this way, it seems like it would be unfairly treating other industries. Like, it's giving extra benefits to the railroad, it's giving different benefits to the pipeline, and different benefits to the builders of the road, which I assume is the state of Montana, than it's giving to this company simply because they're a company.
Well, it's also giving special consideration to recreational companies, too, because, you know, people make money going in and taking people outfitters make money taking people in there, right?
Yeah, they pay something to the federal government for their license to use that area.
Like
you're right,
lease,
but
in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Catherine, yeah. We're up against the break.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call. And
thanks,
we're going to get right back. We have about 8 minutes left in the program. We have both lines open. If you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, give us a call, 721-1290.
Can you block the lines again? Nope. Yeah, block them. There we go. And, of course, you got a call right away. Hey, thanks for calling KCGO. This is John. Hello? Can you hear me? Phantom call. At least it wasn't the... Did you know we can give you better search results with Google?
Hi, I'm with Card Member Services, and we have a lower rate on the card that you have right now.
My voice isn't practiced at all. I'm not running for the presidency. Here we go.
Hey, it's Talk Back, and we're having an interesting discussion this morning with Jennifer Fahrenstein. She's with the Wilderness Society. She's right here in Missoula. We're talking about what's going on with Badger 2 medicine up by Glacier National Park. Some companies have had drilling leases there for many, many years, and it's finally all gone to court, and so they're trying to work it all out.
And I guess before we went to the break, I was positing a problem that I see just as a member of the public, where the federal government's treating some companies different than others,
right.
And it seems unfair, and I guess I'd like to get a response from you, Jennifer.
Well, I think, again, it goes back to that basic question. Was it unfair, you know, to everybody, the public, and the process 30 years ago when the leases were first put, you know, if they were illegal in the first place, then we've made a whole bunch of assumptions based on a wrong decision at the very beginning. So, again,
now,
I think we got to dig back down.
When I asked you to explain the legal proceedings,
yeah.
I didn't get that that was actually something that's going on right now.
I think the challenge is that there's almost two parallel tracks. There's the things that Sidney Longwell and Solonex is pursuing in the courts, and then it'll be what the decision makers that have to manage the land, the BLM, will decide. If the BLM decides come November that the leases were illegal in the first place, then they'll go down the track of looking at whether or not they should cancel the leases and figure out a way to compensate the people that, you know, invested their money in those leases. If the government decides that the leases are not illegal and that cancellation isn't an option, then they'll go down the track of figuring out how to determine whether or not and in what way exploration will occur. So we're kind of coming up on that fork in the road.
Yeah. Now, realistically, Jennifer, okay, considering the history of what's been going on with decisions in that area, do you even see the federal government or this judge giving any sort of favoritism to an oil exploration company, despite the fact that they've been waiting so long, considering the fact that the enormous amount of pressure, political pressure, social pressure, pressure from the tribes, pressure from environmental groups such as the Wilderness Society, whatever, this judge would even dare to decide against all these forces marshaled against it?
Well, this judge is, I think, pretty independent and has indicated his dissatisfaction with the Fed for where they've done it. But again, he's answered the question fairly narrowly, which is, give me a schedule. He hasn't commented on whether he thinks the suspension should be lifted or not. He's just basically said, let's get on with the process and make it reasonable. Wind it up, basically.
Well,
and
I,
so,
to me, it just seems like it's a moot point. I mean, it's like it's not going to happen. Why just give up and go away? That's what I'm hearing in my headphones when I hear all these arguments. Just give up and go. You're not going to win. This is not going
to
happen. The time has
turned. To the oil company?
Well, yeah, to the oil company. Your time is over. You're never going to get to this area. Just pack up your rigs and go home.
And that happened. That did happen. Many of the oil companies, they stopped pursuing their leases. These guys are persistent. So anyway, I wanted to ask you a question, Jennifer, and it has to deal with its illegal nature. I know you're not a lawyer, or maybe you are. I guess I don't know.
No, I'm not.
But you're at least a proponent of the Wilderness Society, and I was hoping you could give me kind of your best case, because I think that would make it the simplest answer. I mean, if you wanted a quick and easy win, it would be that the original leases were illegal. I would like you to make that case for me. Why do you think that should be or could be the case?
Yeah, well, I think that there were fundamental laws in place when the area was opened for leasing, and I think it's clear that when the BLM did their work, they didn't do a very good job. They violated some laws that said they needed to consult with the tribe and with the general public. They violated some laws when they looked at the Clean Water Act and how this might affect water quality and quantity, and they violated the law when they failed to take into consideration some of the animals, the grizzly bear and the different populations of animals that use the area. So I think there's a pretty compelling case
they didn't do enough
that they messed
environmental
up.
Impact, that they didn't do a proper environmental impact study would be the basic case.
Yeah, and that includes, both the environment but also the cultural and other aspects they were supposed to do at the time. And I think the mentality at that time was a little bit more permissive, and I think they really kind of stumbled at that point.
Okay. Tell you what, well, we've got like less than 2 minutes. So, Marilyn, if you can make your point in 1 minute, go.
Okay. I really want to be independent of other countries for our oil, and what always comes up is the gas that we need for our cars. Well, a while back I heard a statistic that said, they said if everybody stopped driving their cars today, we still would need 5 million barrels a day for everything else that oil is used for. So I would like to get independent from those other countries. Would you?
Okay. Thanks, Marilyn. So does that argument resonate with you at all, Jennifer?
Well, I think that we're talking about natural gas, so it's a hard argument to make right now in the Badger 2 medicine because we're not talking about the gas you use in your car. So
okay.
I guess so I would just say this is really not the same.
This would be the gas you use to heat your home in rural Montana, basically.
Yeah, and there's a lot of places that are idle right now because of the price of those products. So it'd be kind of funky to talk about spending a lot of money to go into an area.
Okay, Jennifer, we have less than a minute. So if you can give us some contact information, if folks want to get more information about the Wilderness Society, where do they go?
Yeah, they can go to our website. They can just Google the Wilderness Society. It'll come right up. And there's information about our Too Wild to Drill report and about the Vajutu medicine and a lot of the other areas that we work on around Montana and around the country.
Great. And Jennifer, it's a pleasure. Thanks for putting up with us, and we appreciate you being on the air with us today.
Oh, I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jennifer. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Have a good day.